from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, December the 6th, 2023. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started with
the Daily Datagram.
Yes, sir, words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call on this one. This says the 50-50-90 rule. Anytime you have a 50-50 chance of getting something right, there's a 90% probability you'll get it wrong. Yeah. Story of my life, which explains my math scores throughout school. Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the blogcast, shall we?
Twisted history.
Let's do this.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
For sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Okay.
You might be quizzed.
Well... Alrighty then, here we go, kids. On this day in 1877, Thomas Edison entered the offices of Scientific American and turned the crank on his cylinder phonograph, astonishing those present with the recording.
Good morning. How do you do? How do you like the phonograph?
This preceded anything George Strait did by about 95 years. And it was on this day in 1947, the Everglades National Park in Florida was dedicated by President Truman. He commemorated the event by throwing out the first alligator. There he goes now.
Are you sure this is legal?
Richard Abelson, writing in Gateway Pundit, has an interesting article titled, Time to Say Goodbye, Volodymyr. Ukrainians Sick of War. Kiev Mayor Vitaly Klitschko supports General Zelensky. Or Zelensky over Zelensky. I'm going to try to fight my way through these Ukrainian names, but this is a very interesting article. It's an op-ed, but I want to read it to you. He says, Ukrainian wives and mothers have taken to protesting for their men to be returned from the front on Kiev's Maidan Square. Now the media stage is being set for a regime change and possible end of the hopeless proxy war. As President Volodymyr Zelensky fights with his commander-in-chief and the mayor of Kiev backs the rebel general. The Gateway Pundit was one of the only news media covering the near-total failure of the Biden-Obama-backed spring offensive in Ukraine, which cost approximately 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers. Now, I want you to hold on to that number for a minute. 100,000 Ukrainian soldiers. Since the spring offensive. That's a stunning number. I don't think we would stand for that here in the States. Unusually, Adelson writes, Germany's lead news program, Tagesschau, covered a protest by wives and mothers who object to their sons and husbands being sacrificed for Joe Biden's FUBAR disaster of a proxy war. One woman held up a sign in English reading, 625 days at war. My husband is not a prisoner. Soldiers also have rights, not only duties. Well, in an interview with The Economist, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Ukraine, Valery Zaluzhny, said the war had reached a stalemate and that there will most likely be no deep and beautiful breakthrough. Ukraine's CINC acknowledged it was an error assuming Russia could be deterred by attrition. Zaluzhny said, that was my mistake. Russia has lost at least 150,000 dead. In any other country, such casualties would have stopped the war. Now, General Zaluzhny admitted the Ukrainian spring offensive had failed in its goal to conquer the ethnic Russian regions and reach historically Russian Crimea. He was... Talking again to The Economist, they at least did an interview with him, thank goodness. And he said, if you refer to NATO textbooks and our initial calculations, it should have taken us just 4 months to reach Crimea, engaged in combat, withdraw from Crimea, and re-enter and exit the region. Instead, the Ukrainian army, equipped with billions in Western taxpayer-funded arms, found itself thrown into a meat grinder on casualty-heavy fronts, like Rabotine, fighting inch by inch and hamlet by hamlet, only to find themselves hammered by Russian artillery and drone attacks, even when they made their very limited advances. And then Zaluzhny said, "First, I thought there was something wrong with our commanders, so I changed some of them. Then I thought maybe our soldiers aren't fit for purpose, so I moved soldiers in some brigades. It's important to understand that this war cannot be won with the weapons of the past generation and outdated methods. They will inevitably lead to delay and as a consequence, defeat." Well, kind of hard to argue with that. Man definitely has a point. And the critical interview seemed to be a sign of a growing rift between Zaluzhny and President Volodymyr Zelensky, who now has stopped communicating with the CINC. Now, according to Ukrainska Pravda, that's Ukraine Truth, sources claim Zelensky communicates with some commanders of the armed forces of Ukraine, avoiding Commander-in-Chief Valery Zaluzhny and preventing him from holding overall command of the army. So there's an impression that Zelensky has two types of armed forces. The good ones, commanded by Ground Force Commander Oleksandr, what was his last name? Sirsky, okay, and other favorites. And then bad ones, which are subordinate to Zaluzhny. And it's very demotivating for the commander-in-chief, and most crucially, it prevents him from commanding the entire army. Yeah, it's understandable. Now, the mayor of Kiev, former heavyweight boxer Vitaly Klitschko, has now thrown his weight behind Zaluzhny and against Zelensky, telling Swiss publication 20 Minuten that the general told the truth. Klitschko said, "Some may not want to hear the truth, but we can't lie to our people and partners indefinitely." Klitschko also said that Zaluzhny had been unjustly criticized. Klitschko said it would be inappropriate to discuss his own presidential ambitions, which is a yes. And asked about Zelensky's plummeting popularity, Klitschko said, "People see for themselves who is effective and who is not. People are wondering why we weren't better prepared for this war, why Zelensky denied until the last moment that it would come, or how the Russians could get to Kiev so quickly." This is Klitschko speaking, by the way. "The president has an important function, and we must support him until the end of the war. But at the end of the war, every politician will answer for his successes and failures." I don't think we do that here, do we? Acting Assistant Secretary of State and Ukraine war hawk Victoria Nuland, bad woman. Famously discussed whether the USA should install Vitaly Klitschko or Arseniy Yatsenyuk as the next president of Ukraine. Did you catch that term, install? Forget elections. Well, they've been canceled over there anyhow. Zelensky canceled the elections. So what? We have a dictatorship there under Zelensky? Is that what we're supporting now? So anyhow, Victoria Nuland famously discussed whether the USA should install Vitaly Klitschko or Arseniy Yatsenyuk, wow, as the next president of Ukraine after the NATO-sponsored maiden coup in 2014 in a phone call with U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey Pyatt. And Nuland said in 2014, "I don't think Klitsch," that's how she refers to him, Klitsch, "should go into the government. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea. I think Yats," that's her short term for Yatsenyuk, "is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the, now this is a direct quote of Victoria Nuland, "he's the, what he needs is Klitsch and Oleg," that's a reference to Oleg Tyanbuk, "on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know? I just think Klitsch going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work." Victoria Nuland has really been the devil in the details in this whole thing. Particularly our support. I'm not sure that our support for Ukraine has been has been a positive thing at all. I think we've managed to keep Ukraine bogged down in a state of war. I mean, you got to look at this thing honestly. What is more advantageous? Should Ukraine just give it up and let Russia come in? I mean, I can see where that idea is pretty repulsive too, but look at all the lives lost. We're talking 100,000 just since last spring. That's not the total death count. That's just since last spring, that so-called spring offensive that Nuland so forcefully supported. She sold it. I mean, she's a slicker salesperson than anything that Amway ever had. She really is. She could have taught Dale Carnegie a thing or two. So now, in the final analysis here, if there can be a final analysis, and I'm not sure there can be, but maybe the closest thing we can get to a final analysis is apparently Vitaly Klitschko is lining himself up to be the president of Ukraine after all. Should that happen, then what? Over in trending politics, Chris Powell has an interesting article about Scranton, PA, the voters over there, the man on the street, the woman on the street, Biden's hometown, Scranton, PA. He always drops Scranton's name when he's giving folksy kind of speeches, and they hold nothing back. It's fair to say that the sentiments of local residents tell a story that contrasts very sharply with the narrative presented by the administration. Interviews conducted on the streets, most notably by Fox. Fox had their microphones and cameras down there, uncovered deep-seated feelings of disillusionment and discontent for the Biden administration. And let me roll some audio here for you. This is from Fox.
My opinion is he praises here, but I don't think he actually grew up here technically. So he uses that as that he cares about us.
Tougher for people, you know. So how could he be seeing it through our eyes?
I'm a registered Democrat, but I'm not happy.
I think he's the worst president we ever had, to be honest with you. But now I'm done. This economy sucks. I mean, everything's going up except, paychecks, I just think the economy sucks.
For a city often spotlighted as a symbol of Biden's roots and values, the disconnect between the president's policies and the reality of his purported hometown is increasingly evident. Let's not forget the fact that Scranton is also often looked upon as one of those many Rust Belt towns in the Great Lakes area. Now, the sentiment in Scranton is a microcosm of a larger national mood, of course, because nobody's really got it good these days. As Biden continues to fail to connect with the American people, but it's going to take a lot more than just connecting with the American people. We've got to have a complete change of policy. We've got to shut down the border. We got to stop printing money to support this stupid war in Ukraine. We have to get tough in the Middle East, and I mean very tough, Trump kind of tough in the Middle East. Because our economy is doomed until we get that bastard out of the White House. Now, this sentiment, particularly among those who would be Joe Biden's core supporters, reflects a broader national trend of dissatisfaction within and without the Democratic Party, okay? Now, this is starkly evident in the poll results, which show a deep divide among Democrats over Biden's performance and U.S. foreign policy, especially toward Israel. I mean, did you ever think that in a million years you would ever see the level of anti-Semitism that has festered in this country? But then again, I think a lot of that can be attributed to the open borders. Borders that have been open for way too long. Because a lot of this anti-Semitism is being brought to the forefront by Muslims who have immigrated to this country, a good many of them illegally. So the divide reflects a broader discontent with Biden's overall leadership as well. You have one Harvard Caps Harris poll that further showed this, with a substantial number of Democrats and independents expressing their reluctance about Biden's candidacy for a second term in 2024. A lot of them just have doubts about his cognitive abilities. Remember, we're talking to Democrats here, and trends suggest a growing rift within the party itself, not only in terms of policy, but also in the choice of leadership. I mean, I still scratch my head every day. I've done this ever since Biden won the election. Who within the Democrat Party thought it would be a good idea to run this senile old coot? Now, this growing discontent among Democrats, if not addressed, could have far-reaching consequences for the party's future. I'm talking about long into the future, and the party's ability to maintain unity in 2024 and beyond. Now, domestic affairs don't paint a pretty picture either, because earlier on Monday, the House Oversight Committee disclosed that Hunter Biden's business entity, Owasco PC, made direct monthly payments to Joe Biden, the big guy. And this contradicted Joe Biden's previous assertions of non-involvement in his family's business dealings. Now, we all know the man's been lying to us. How can you tell Joe Biden's lying? His lips are moving. And new evidence now suggests a closer connection between the president's official duties and his family's business ventures than previously admitted. I would submit to you that we have not even uncovered the tip of the iceberg yet. I can't help thinking that Walt Disney is probably spinning around in his cryogenic chamber right about now. Warner Todd Houston just exploded the other day in the Gateway Pundit with an article that every American should hear, especially every parent. He says the flailing Disney Corporation is still digging that woke hole to bury itself in, and its latest Christmas movie aimed at teens is just another example of its continuing obsession to jam radical LGBT themes in every movie and TV show that it makes for kids. Now, before I continue with Mr. Houston's article, let me reiterate that the financial statements from the Disney Corporation over the last year, year and a half, 2 years, haven't looked very good. And they keep looking worse and worse and worse. And this is why they got Bob Iger, supposedly a former CEO. This is supposedly why they got Bob Iger out of mothballs and put him back at the top of the Disney Corporation. Well, what changes has he made? None. Sometimes I think all they do is they march these people out because of name recognition. Iger hasn't done anything to straighten up Disney's act. So, Warner continues by saying, if you thought you might be tuning in to see its newest holiday flick, The Naughty Nine, to see a fun Christmas romp, you'll instead be confronted with a family headed by a pair of gay dads and another scene where two young boys are confiding in each other about who they think is a male hottie. The Naughty Nine was released on November 22nd on the Disney Channel and features the story of nine young kids who ended up on Santa's naughty list and who venture to the North Pole to steal back the gifts that they missed on Christmas. Now, the film is supposed to be a funny film in the heist style of films about scheming, oddball kids who set out to rob Santa but learn some lessons along the way. However, instead of lighthearted fare, viewers are once again treated to Disney's political agenda and its need to pump the gay lifestyle into every project. And this particular film is rated TVPG. Well, indeed, the film only gets about 12 minutes in before viewers are treated to a family with two dads as kids sit around the Christmas tree opening gifts on Christmas morning. Naturally, the two dad family is treated as perfectly normal. But that's only the first LGBT agenda-driven segment, because only 10 minutes later, two of the boys in the movie are seen talking about hot guys. Now, one of the characters named John, played by Derek McCabe, who's portrayed as exhibiting obvious gay characteristics, is talking with another boy about his own line of clothing. The character then tells his friend he offered to sell his designs to a boy and says, I told that hottie over there I'd sell it to him for $200. There's at least one more scene with gay sexual content when John describes yet another boy as cute. Now, the Federalists, Eleanor Bartow, notes that the film doesn't pinpoint what age John is supposed to be in the film, but he's palling around with fifth graders, and some of the kids in the film are even younger. Now, I think that there really should be an alarm here, because this smacks of grooming, doesn't it? Now, the star of the film, Winslow Fegley, who portrays a precocious character, Andy, is called a mischievous fifth grader in Disney's summation of the film. So what we have here is Disney once again sexualizing kids under 11 years of age. Do you think Walt would have approved of this? So it shouldn't be a surprise, as tedious and dangerous as it is, because Disney's been doing this for years, and it has, well, in effect, lost millions in the process as parents have stopped patronizing the company, which was once known for its wholesome family entertainment. Last year, for instance, Disney jammed LGBT content into the animated film Strange World, a film it hoped would be a big hit for them over the Thanksgiving holiday season. Unsurprisingly, the movie tanked. Strange World was far from the only woke box office bomb that Disney landed with a thud in theaters over the last few years. The House of Mouse also lost tall dollars with Lightyear in 2022, a film that also leaned hard on its inclusion of gay characters. So it shouldn't be surprising that these flops, among others, including the animated Wish, which only debuted 2 weeks ago and has already tanked, is being foisted on kids via Disney programming and films. After all, in 2022, we were all forewarned that Disney's producers, writers, animators, and directors have made it their goal to purposefully stuff as much radical gay and transgender content as they can into Disney's products when videos emerged, showing these people admitting to their agenda. There are videos floating around out there where you see them admitting to this. Now, Disney deserves to lose millions. And it has and continues to. In fact, in a disclosure filing with the federal government, Disney admitted it knows full well that its far-left anti-family political agenda is costing it millions, and apparently, they don't care. Our friend Tom Ozimek in the Epoch Times says new orders for American-made goods have suffered the sharpest drop in 3.5 years, with the latest sign of a slump in U.S. manufacturing, adding to fears of a coming recession. You know, this is where I have to scoff. A coming recession. You mean we're not in a recession now? We've been in a recession for 2 years. Well, according to the latest month of available information from the Commerce Department Census Bureau, factory orders fell 3.6% in October, just October alone. And that decline is the sharpest monthly drop since April of 2020, when pandemic lockdowns rattled the economy. Now, the Commerce Department report also showed that new orders for manufactured durable goods fell 5.4% after a 4% rise in September. So you go up a little bit, and then you crash down even further. Then you go up just a little bit, then you crash down further still. Now, the disappointing factory numbers came hot on the heels of other data suggesting that America's manufacturing sector is mired in weakness, and the economy is heading for a slowdown. All right, so why is this all happening? Well, it's because virtually every decision being made out of the White House, which affects every one of us, is an ill-conceived decision. We're bogged down with Ukraine. Obviously, very soon, we're going to be sending more and more resources and money to the Middle East. We have to start ramping up against China, because China's licking its chops over Taiwan. And to do all this, we're printing money. And every time they print, I say this over and over and over again, but you have to understand this concept. Every time the Fed prints another American dollar bill, it devalues the dollar in your wallet. So basically, the economy is hitting stall speed at the moment, and it'll get worse. This closely watched Institute for Supply Management's manufacturing PMI shows that U.S. manufacturing activity contracted in November for the 13th consecutive month. 13 months our economy has been contracting, at least the manufacturing activity. because demand is softening and new orders fell. So this 13-month-long U.S. manufacturing decline is the longest down streak since the 2008-2009 financial crisis. Y'all remember that. The manufacturing sector accounts for roughly 11% of the U.S. economy. And even though the U.S. economy has defied predictions for a recession, recent economic data, in addition to the manufacturing slump, paint a picture of a looming slowdown, including lackluster growth in consumer spending and a cooling job market, none of which is good. Now, economist David Rosenberg said in a post on X that the signs point to the U.S. economy flatlining. He pointed out that the Federal Reserve's real-time estimate of economic growth for the current quarter has dropped from 2.1% on November 22nd to 1.8% on November 30th, and then 1.2% on December 4th. You know December 4th, don't you? That was the day before yesterday. He says that is the freshly minted Atlanta Fed nowcast estimate for Q4 real GDP growth. In two words or less, stall speed. So recession, you know, I'm sorry, I think we're in a recession right now. But apparently I don't know the definition of recession, and neither do you. So what they're saying right now, they, the experts, the government talking heads, say that recession is in the near term. Well, whatever. John and Jane Q. American Citizen are suffering. This is not a happy Christmas. See if we can't cheer things up just a little bit here. Let's go to the Comedy Corner with James P. Connolly.
Thank you. I don't talk a lot about my sobriety. I still get very self-conscious discussing my sobriety in public because when I talk about it in public, my attitude has always been just be less annoying than a vegan. That's always been my attitude. And obviously nothing against the vegan, because, you know, we, the recently sober, we kind of have a reputation of maybe oversharing just a little bit too much. But I think we could all agree that the vegan is still the gold standard in American society for seriously, I didn't ask you. So I'm very conscious of that. And on the off chance that I've offended a vegan here tonight, obviously I'm not physically afraid of you, so let's continue here tonight. Vegans, let's do this right now. So I am originally from Los Angeles, California. Any Angelino transplants out here? Oh, I didn't expect that. You caught me off guard. Thank you. I will let you know, my lovely lady, I used to travel America, and I would tell the people of this great country that I come from Los Angeles, California. And I didn't know this, maybe you know this, but apparently people are not nearly as impressed with us as we are with ourselves. They think we have it easy just because we enjoy the perfect weather. And I'm not going to argue with you that we do not have some pretty dang perfect weather. Because, you know, sometimes during an earthquake or a mudslide or a wildfire that scorches the hillside that forces me out of my home only to get stuck in traffic, I look up at the sky and I go, my gosh, this weather's perfect. What a great day to evacuate, man. Look at that. Everybody has weather, but we don't brag about it in California. Like East Coast, the mighty hurricane, right? Midwest, the mighty tornado. But here's the difference. Hurricane warning. Tornado warning. This is my impersonation of an earthquake warning. What the heck was that? There's a reason why we have bobblehead dolls in my house. Sometimes I'm watching TV, and out of the corner of my eye, I'm like, wait a minute, why is LeBron James saying no right now? What's that, LeBron? Get the cow. So a lot of people, they want to know, you know, what did we do before we became stand-up comedians? I used to be a man before I was a comedian. Had a man job. We live rugged people here, you guys. A lot of men with sleeves that I can see muscles on. I used to be a man. Used to be in the United States Marine Corps. That was my job before I did this. You're welcome, and you're very kind, because usually when I tell people that I was in the Marines, they tend to look at me like, look, man, don't take this the wrong way, but you don't look anything like a Marine. Well, of course, I don't look like a Marine, because that's exactly what the enemy would be expecting me to look like. But you never really get out of the Marine Corps, do you? Because they have that dang saying, once a Marine, always a Marine. Seems a bit much, doesn't it? The other services don't do that. You know what the Navy's motto is? Once a sailor, not anymore. Very normal.
Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.